From a meeting at the office to a big first date, there's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every event. But clothes don't make the man. So why stuff your closet with things that only work for some situations? With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting. Their clothing is understated and tells the world that you stay you wherever you go. They craft each piece by combining timeless style and modern performance materials, so you can stay looking good and feeling comfortable from morning to evening. No wardrobe changes required. Browse everything from summer-ready tech linen shorts and anti-odor polos to tailored sweats and crews for a night in. They can outfit you for anything, no matter what's on your agenda for the day. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACKWELDON.com, promo code MACK25.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.
4th of July deals are on at Lowe's. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances, including the Samsung Bespoke French Door Refrigerator, featuring Beverage Center and Dual Ice Maker. Plus, when you buy more, you save more. Now's the perfect time to upgrade your home with top Samsung appliances and hot 4th of July savings at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
Story 1. I'm not one of those people who scares easy. I've worked late shifts, driven through empty deserts, slept in my truck at truck stops, all that. But what happened 2 years ago on a back road in Mendocino County still messes with me. I don't care if no one believes it. Hell, I barely believe it myself. But I swear this happened, and I haven't driven that stretch of road since. I live in Ukiah, Northern California, just off Highway 101. That night, I was driving back from a family reunion down in Santa Rosa. It was one of those late summer Saturdays where everyone gets too drunk, tells the same stories, and stays too long. I didn't drink, thankfully, because I had to work the morning shift at the garage the next day. So around 10:30 p.m., I said my goodbyes and hit the road. The drive's about 2 hours through the winding forest roads up through the Mayacamas Mountains. It's beautiful in the daylight. At night, though, it's just pitch black woods and two-lane highways with zero cell reception. I was about 45 minutes into the drive when the exhaustion hit me like a punch. Not the gradual kind, the sudden, heavy-lid kind. My head kept jerking up every few seconds, and I started seeing those weird flashes in my peripheral vision. The ones you get when your brain's trying to dream while you're still awake. I told myself I'd pull off and nap somewhere, but there was nothing, just dark trees and occasional mailboxes. Eventually, I saw a narrow dirt turnout, half hidden behind some brush, so I eased off the road and parked behind the shrubs. I didn't want anyone calling the cops thinking I'd broken down or something. I turned off the engine, locked the doors, cracked a window, and slumped back in the seat. It was 11:22 p.m. I don't know how long I was out, but I woke up to this light scratching, just a faint, dry scraping. My eyes flicked to the clock, 11:50. I sat up, listened. It stopped. Could have been a branch in the breeze. I was too out of it to care. I shifted, scratched my arm, and went back out cold. Then came the second time. It was louder, like fingernails across glass, but slower. That time it didn't stop. It went on and on, methodical and deliberate, not frantic like an animal. I opened my eyes, my whole body buzzing with that wired kind of panic. I looked at the clock again, 12:40 a.m. I didn't move at first, I just listened. It was right near the rear of the car, dragging along the back window. I reached down slow and flipped on the dome light, and the scratching stopped. I craned my neck and looked in the rearview mirror. Just for a second, no more than a second, I caught something moving. Thin, pale legs, like a person, but too long, too quick, sprinting into the trees on all fours. I felt this cold weight settle in my chest. You know that urban legend, the hook man or whatever? My brain jumped to that. I reached down, started the engine, didn't even bother adjusting my seat or checking behind me. I just gunned it. There was a bend in the road just ahead, and as I rounded it, I saw a car parked on the shoulder. Driver's door wide open. No hazard lights. No people. I slowed. Not because I wanted to, I didn't, but because instinct made me check. I crept past it, headlights sweeping the interior. No one. I didn't stop. I just pressed down harder on the gas and kept driving. I didn't look back. I got home around 1:50 a.m., locked every door, shut the blinds, and didn't sleep a minute that night. I called in sick the next day. I told myself it was just a tweaker or some hiker messing around. But the thing I saw in the mirror didn't move like a person. It ran like an animal, but it had arms and legs. The way it dropped and bolted, too fast, too fluid. I went back a week later, in daylight, same spot. There were tire tracks, mine, but also other prints in the dirt. Not shoes, not hooves, just deep, narrow imprints like hands. I never reported it. What would I say? That I saw something crawl into the woods behind my car? Believe me or don't, but if you're ever driving through Mendocino County after midnight and you start to feel your eyes get heavy, do yourself a favor. Keep driving. Don't stop. Whatever that thing was, it knew I was asleep. It came back for a reason. Story 2. I was 11 when it happened. We lived in a quiet two-story ranch house just outside Bend, Oregon, surrounded by pine forest and fog most mornings. My bedroom was upstairs at the far end of the hall, the only room without windows facing the road. I liked that. It made me feel tucked away, safe. That night felt like any other. I had gone to bed around 9 p.m., no TV, no reading. I remember it was dead quiet outside, so quiet I could hear the light bulb in my desk lamp hum before I clicked it off. I fell asleep fast. The next thing I knew, I was awake. No noise had woken me, no dream I could remember, but something felt wrong. I didn't sit up. I just laid there, eyes open, staring at the dark ceiling. It was pitch black. Still. But I felt it. This heavy pressure in the room, like the air had thickened, like someone was standing right next to the bed holding their breath. I reached up to scratch my cheek and my hand came away wet. I thought maybe I'd been drooling. I wiped my face, then paused. My fingers were sticky. When I turned on the lamp, everything turned white for a second before my eyes adjusted. That's when I saw it. Blood. A dark smear across my hand and arm, and more of it soaking my pillow. I blinked and looked in the mirror over my dresser. The left side of my face was slashed wide open, a clean, deep cut that ran from just below my temple down to my cheekbone, barely missing my eye. Blood was pouring out of it. My t-shirt was soaked through. And the crazy part? I didn't feel a thing, no pain, no stinging, just wet and warm. I bolted from my room holding my face and stumbled down the hall to my parents' room. I didn't even knock. I shoved the door open and flipped on the lights. My dad sat straight up in bed. "Jesus Christ," he shouted and leapt out from under the covers. My mom screamed, "What happened?" "I don't know," I stammered, crying now. "I just woke up like this." They rushed me into the bathroom. My dad held a towel to my face while my mom grabbed the car keys. It took 8 stitches at the ER. The nurse kept asking me, gently, if I was being hurt at home. I kept shaking my head, saying, "No, I just woke up like that." When we got home at 4 a.m., my dad walked into my room with a flashlight. He checked everything. The headboard, the sheets, the pillow, my bookshelf, the carpet. He even took the mattress off the frame to check for nails or springs or glass or whatever else he could imagine. There was nothing. No broken glass, no sharp objects, no blood anywhere but the bed and my body. The cut was so precise that the ER doctor asked if I'd fallen on a razor blade, but there was no razor, nothing remotely sharp in my room. The next day, my parents tried to laugh it off, calling it the bloody mystery, but I couldn't sleep in that room again, and I refused to be alone upstairs. I slept on the couch for the next 3 weeks. We moved about 2 years later, and honestly, I didn't think much about it again, until I was in college and came home for Thanksgiving. I brought it up as kind of a joke at dinner. Remember when I got sliced in my sleep and we never figured out what did it? My mom didn't laugh. She stared at her plate. My dad gave me this weird look, half nervous, half worried. Yeah, he said. We never figured that out. Later that night, after everyone had gone to bed, I caught my dad in the kitchen, sipping from a glass of whiskey. I asked him, point blank, if he ever really believed it was just a freak accident. He looked out the window into the darkness for a long time before he spoke. I don't know what I believe, he said, but I never told you the whole thing. I just stared at him. When your mom and I checked your room that night, we did find something. What? He paused. Under your bed. My stomach turned. There was a handprint, a blood smear, right under the mattress, on the wood slats, like someone had touched it and pulled their hand away. I didn't say anything. We didn't know what to do with that. I didn't want to scare you, and I couldn't explain it. But I cleaned it up. I told your mom it was probably from your nose or something. But it didn't match where your head had been. It was underneath, like someone had been under there. He wouldn't look at me. And the worst part is, he continued quietly, there were no footprints in the carpet, no signs that anyone came or went. I stood there for a while, just breathing. I don't know what happened that night, but whatever it wasn't an accident, it wasn't a dream, and it never happened again. Story 3. I never used to be afraid of the dark. Growing up in Sacramento, I was used to quiet nights, sometimes too quiet, but after what happened last summer, I haven't slept without blackout curtains and a knife within reach. My parents own a weird house on the edge of town, tucked between empty lots and half-built homes from a development that stalled in the 2008 crash.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Rebate in form of Visa gift card equal to 100% off the second eligible item purchased before or after applicable discounts, if any. See details. Offer ends 7/9.
We moved there when I was 16. I stayed behind after college, renting it from them when they moved to Arizona. The place always gave off a weird vibe, set way back from the street with a long, cracked sidewalk that runs past the front windows like a runway. The front door opens straight into the living room, and the entire wall facing the sidewalk is just tall, fixed-pane windows. They don't open. They don't even have curtains. Just big, clear glass panes like you're on display. It never bothered me until I was alone. My sister calls the house the fishbowl. She's not wrong. Last August, my folks went on a 2-week cruise, and I stayed behind to house sit. I'd just broken up with my girlfriend, and the quiet seemed like a good excuse to get drunk and feel sorry for myself. That Friday, I came home from work with a six-pack, sat on the couch facing the windows, and started drinking while the sun went down. By 9:30, I was out cold. I woke up sweating, no idea why, just wide awake in a snap, heart going fast. I was still on the couch, my head propped on a pillow, lights off. The room was bathed in pale blue from the street lamp that sits crooked at the end of our lot. I could see the shapes of the furniture clearly, the coffee table, the coat rack, the lamp I never use, and the windows. That's when I noticed the chill. I know that sounds cliche, but I swear, my skin went cold all at once, like someone had opened a freezer door in front of me. I didn't move. I just lay there, staring up at the ceiling, trying to tell myself it was just a draft. But it felt wrong, like I was being watched. Then I heard it. Three sharp bangs, right above my head. I froze. It came from the window. Something or someone had just hit the glass directly behind the couch. I didn't sit up. I didn't even breathe. I just rolled my eyes upward, toward the window over my head, and I saw a face, not pressed up against the glass, not peeking around a corner. Just there, motionless. Right on the other side of the pane, lit faintly by the street lamp behind it. The person wasn't wearing a mask. They didn't have glowing eyes or blood running down their chin. That would have almost been easier. It was just a face, pale, staring straight down at me. Then the banging started again, two fists slamming into the glass like they were trying to break it. One, two, three, again, again. I bolted upright, stumbled backward over the coffee table, and hit the floor hard. I crawled behind the couch, heart in my throat, still staring up at the window. The face was gone, but I hadn't imagined it. I know I hadn't. I grabbed my phone from the floor, but I didn't call anyone. I don't know why. I think part of me thought it was a prank, some dumb kid, or a drunk. I crouched there for a minute, waiting. Then the front door started shaking. The banging moved. Someone, or maybe now more than one person, was hitting the door, hard. Open palm slaps at first, then kicks. The kind of kicks you use when you're trying to bust a door down. "Who's there?" I shouted. No answer, just more pounding. "Hey, I'm calling the cops," I yelled, louder this time. Still nothing. Just the sound of fists on the window again, now from two different directions. One behind the couch, one at the far end of the window wall near the dining table. I couldn't understand how they moved so fast, unless there were two of them, or more. The whole front of the house felt like it was under attack. The glass trembled. The doorframe groaned. I backed toward the hallway, phone in one hand, the fireplace poker in the other. I'd never felt so powerless. All that glass. No curtains. No cover. Then just as fast as it started, it stopped. No sound. Nothing. I waited, frozen, staring at the door, then the windows. My heart was jackhammering in my chest. I couldn't hear anything outside. No footsteps, no engine, no voices. I finally worked up the nerve to check the door. I approached it slowly, like it might explode outward. I flicked on the porch light and peeked through the peephole. Empty. I checked the windows. No one. The sidewalk was bare, stretching out toward the street like a landing strip. Street lamp still flickering. But the face I'd seen, how close it was, how it stared down at me like it already knew I'd wake up. Like it was waiting. I didn't sleep the rest of the night. I sat on the floor of the hallway with every light in the house on, staring at the front door, fireplace poker across my knees. The next morning, I called my buddy Evan and told him I needed someone to crash at the house for a few nights. I didn't tell him everything, just that someone had been outside trying to get in. "You sure you weren't just wasted?" he said. "I wasn't that drunk," I said. "I saw a face. It was right there." "So, what? You want me to come over and get murdered with you? That the plan?" I didn't laugh. I couldn't. "Dude, I'm serious," he sighed. "I'll come tonight." But he didn't. Something came up. He never explained what. I slept in the hallway again. Didn't go near the windows. Didn't sit on that couch for weeks. I checked the porch camera the next day. But of course, it was dead. The battery had died sometime the week before. I hadn't recharged it. Nothing was ever stolen. Nothing was broken. But I know what I saw. Story 4. I grew up in a quiet one-story ranch house in northern New Mexico. middle of nowhere, with flat scrubland stretching out behind our backyard like an endless stage. I was 10 when this happened, and if you ask any of my cousins today, they'll still get serious about it. We never figured out what it was. No one believed us, but we all saw the same thing. That night was just supposed to be movies and junk food. All the adults, my parents, my aunts, uncles, and grandparents, had gone out to some fancy steakhouse in town, leaving the 10 of us kids alone. The oldest cousin, Justin, was 15 and acting like he was in charge, barking orders and hogging the remote. I remember it was around 9:30, and we were watching some old action movie in the living room. The curtains drawn, the lights low. Nothing creepy, nothing weird. Just kids being loud and laughing too hard. Then the house shook. Not like a creak or a thud. I'm talking full-body jolt, like something massive hit the earth right outside. There was this boom that sounded like it came from underground, and a blinding white flash poured in through the back windows. It felt hot for half a second, like we'd opened an oven. We screamed. All of us. No one even had to say anything. We just ran into the hallway as one big terrified blob. I remember the sound of feet thudding on the carpet, someone knocking over a bowl of popcorn, and the youngest cousin, Ava, crying instantly. "What the hell was that?" Justin yelled. "Was that lightning?" I asked, heart punching my ribs. "No," said Maria, another cousin. She was crouched next to me, white as a sheet. "That wasn't lightning." We were all shaking. The air felt weird, charged. It smelled faintly like metal, like the air after a lightning storm, but heavier. We huddled there for a few seconds, wide-eyed, listening. The weirdest part, total silence. No sirens, no barking dogs, not even crickets. Justin pulled out his flip phone, hands fumbling. "I'm calling Dad." "You should call the cops," someone shouted, but he ignored them. I remember the exact words he said. "Dad, something exploded in the backyard. The house shook. We saw a flash." "No, I'm serious. It's not fireworks." He kept talking, trying to explain, but you could tell no one was taking him seriously. Finally, he hung up and said, "They're coming home. Told us to stay inside." "What if it was a gas line or something?" I asked. "There's no gas line in the backyard," Maria said quietly. None of us wanted to go look. That silence had gotten inside us. It felt wrong, like even the house itself was holding its breath. But after maybe 10 minutes of hiding in the hallway, we started whispering, nervous debates about what it might have been. Earthquake? Transformer explosion? Meteor? We started to feel a little braver, like maybe we overreacted. Justin said, "All right, let's just check the living room again." We moved as a unit. No one stayed behind. The popcorn bowl was upside down, and the movie had paused on a frozen frame. We all stood there, half expecting another boom, another flash, but nothing happened. The curtains were still drawn. Justin crept forward and peeked through them. "What do you see?" someone whispered. He didn't answer. We all leaned in behind him. The backyard was just darkness. Flat, empty, same as always. No craters, no fire, not even smoke. Then we noticed the light, not a flash, not anything bright, just a faint red glow coming from the far edge of the yard, right where the property line met the open desert. "Do you see that?" Maria said. "It's flickering," I whispered. It pulsed low and slow like a heartbeat. Justin backed away from the window. "Weapons," he said, "just in case." That sounds funny now. 10 kids grabbing brooms and plastic toy bats like we were going to defend the house from whatever. But it didn't feel funny then. I grabbed a fireplace poker. Someone else had a tennis racket. Ava clung to a rolled-up yoga mat. We didn't go outside. No way. But we kept watching that light through the curtain. Then it stopped. Just out. Gone. 1 second it was there, the next it wasn't. Nothing moved. We waited. 10 minutes passed, then 20, still nothing. That's when the headlights pulled into the driveway. Our parents were back. We all jumped up and ran to the door. My dad barely got it open before Justin blurted, "Something exploded in the backyard. The house shook. There was this flash." My aunt laughed. "Oh God, you scared yourselves watching movies, didn't you?" "No," I shouted. "The whole house shook. We all felt it." One by one, they brushed it off. They checked the backyard with flashlights. Nothing. Not a single footprint, no scorch marks, no damage, no explanation. They even walked out to the edge of the property where we'd seen the light. Flat ground. Just rocks and weeds. It must have been a transformer, my uncle said. Or a small earthquake, my mom added. None of the neighbors said anything, Grandma chimed in. We didn't feel anything in town. That made it worse. All 10 of us experienced the exact same thing at the same time. The sound, the flash, the heat, the shaking, the light. And yet, nothing was there. No evidence. No noise anywhere else. No reports on the news. No calls to the power company. We all slept in the same room that night. Lights on, doors locked. Nobody talks about it anymore like it was a joke. Even the older cousins admit they don't have a clue. It wasn't a dream. It wasn't our imaginations. And whatever happened that night, it happened to all of us, once, all at once. Story 5. I don't usually talk about this, but it still messes with my head. Last summer, I was staying at my parents' place in upstate New York. Small town, quiet neighborhood, just a long road lined with maples and houses spaced too far apart for anyone to hear you scream. I was home for a week before heading back to college. It was around 3 in the morning, and I was in my room, half watching YouTube with headphones on, lights off, windows cracked, because the house always felt too warm. That's when I saw my sister's name flash on my phone. Mia. Now this immediately felt off. Mia's room was literally 10 steps down the hall. If she needed me, she'd just come in like she always did. She never called me. Ever. I paused the video, slid my headphones off, and reached to answer. But the call cut out right before I touched the screen. Just one ring. No message. No missed call chime. Nothing. Thinking maybe she needed something, or had a nightmare, or something dumb like that, I got up and walked down the hallway. I remember how quiet the house was. You know when it's so still you can hear your own blood moving? It was that kind of quiet. Her door was cracked. I pushed it gently. Mia, I said. That's when she screamed. Not a normal scream. This was that raw, primal kind of screaming you don't forget. I kicked the door open without thinking, ran in and turned the light on. She was sitting up in bed, back against the headboard, crying so hard she couldn't even breathe properly. Her eyes were fixed on the space in front of her, like she was still seeing something. I did a full sweep of the room. Nobody there. Closet open, nothing under the bed. Window locked from the inside. Mia, what the hell happened? I asked. She shook her head, wiped her eyes with the heel of her hand, and said, Something was here. What do you mean? I woke up and... She broke off, voice cracking. There was something right in front of my face. Like inches away, just standing there. Black. It didn't move. It didn't even breathe. You're saying someone was in here? She nodded slowly, still shaking. It was looking at me. Now here's where it gets weird. I told her, you called me like 30 seconds ago. She looked confused. What? No, I didn't. I held up my phone. Her name. Incoming call. 3:02 a.m. I thought you needed something. That's why I came down here. I didn't call you, Tyler. I was asleep. Well, your phone says otherwise. She turned to her nightstand and started looking around. Then she said, wait, my phone's not even in here. We both walked downstairs. Her purse was hanging off the side of the dining room chair. She reached in and pulled out her phone. It was off. Battery dead. Dead. I stood there, just staring at it. You sure you didn't plug it in earlier? Number it died earlier this evening. I never brought it back upstairs. Back upstairs, I checked the call log again. The call was still there. One ring, 3:02 a.m. She turned her phone on after plugging it into the wall. When it finally booted up, she checked her outgoing calls. Nothing there. No call to me. Not even a missed attempt. But it was still on my screen. Incoming call. From her number. From a dead phone that wasn't even in the same room. I didn't know what to say. She didn't either. And the whole time she kept glancing toward the corner of the room like she was afraid whatever she saw might come back. I asked her again, carefully, are you absolutely sure you saw something? She nodded fast. I wasn't dreaming. I was awake. It was like this thing was...
just watching me, like it was waiting. We both stayed in the living room until sunrise, watching the hallway like it might turn into something else if we blinked. Story 6. People always think ghost stories start in graveyards or abandoned houses. Ours started with a phone call on a Tuesday. My name's Leo. I'm 34 now, live in Bakersfield, California, and I've never told this story outside our family. It's one of those things that doesn't make sense no matter how many times you go over it in your head, but it happened. I swear to God it happened. This was almost 17 years ago. My cousin Nina had just died in a car wreck. She was 17. I was only a couple years younger than her, and we were close. She was the type who'd make a dumb joke at a funeral just to make someone laugh. Always wore this red baseball cap, long brown hair, white puffer jacket, denim overalls, like something out of a 90s music video. That was just her style. She died in the ICU about 2 weeks after the crash. We were gutted, especially my Aunt Carla. Nina used to babysit her two little boys all the time. Carla was remodeling the back half of her house during all this, and construction kept going even after Nina passed. So there were workers coming and going almost every day. One afternoon, Carla called me at work, voice shaky. Not like crying shaky, just off. "Hey," she said, "do you have a second?" "Yeah, what's wrong?" "I just got a call from the foreman at the house. He said there's been a girl hanging around the property." I thought she meant a neighbor's kid, maybe someone being nosy. "Okay." "They said she keeps showing up, like more than once a week. Just walks around the place, doesn't talk, doesn't respond when they call out to her." My stomach dropped. "What does she look like?" Carla hesitated. "Long brown hair, red cap, white jacket, dungarees." I didn't say anything. "They said she looks about 17, 18 maybe." I still didn't say anything. "Leo," she said, "they described her exactly." That night I drove straight to Carla's place after work. She had the foreman's number and called him again while I was there. She put him on speaker so I could hear. "Yeah, I mean, she's not aggressive or anything," the guy said. "We just thought it was weird. She doesn't answer when we talk to her. She walks around the old part of the house, then just sort of disappears down the side alley." "How long has this been going on?" Carla asked. "Couple weeks, maybe. First time we saw her was before the new drywall went up. She comes midday, usually when we're having lunch out back. Some of the guys thought she was your daughter." Carla swallowed hard. "She's not." I got chills, actual full-body chills. Carla pulled out this framed picture from the hallway shelf. It was Nina's last school photo. Same red hat, same clothes. She handed it to me. "Come tomorrow," she said. "Bring it. Show them." So I did. Next day around 11 a.m., I drove back to her place with the photo in my backpack. There were three workers on site, two older guys and one younger guy, probably in his 20s. I introduced myself, explained what Carla told me, and pulled out the photo. I didn't say anything. I just handed it to them. The youngest guy took one look and went pale, like straight up drained of color. He nodded without saying anything. The older guy next to him stepped back and muttered, "Jesus Christ. That's her," he said. "That's the girl." "No question," the young guy added. "She walked right past me 3 days ago. I thought she was mute or something. I said hi, and she didn't even look at me." I asked where exactly they'd seen her. They pointed toward the side of the house, by the exposed foundation and the unfinished hallway that connected the old kitchen to what would have been the new den. "That's where she always shows up," the foreman said, "right by the fuse box." I walked over there just to see. It was this narrow area behind the house where the siding had been ripped off and temporary plastic sheeting hung in strips. There were boot prints in the dirt. I bent down and saw a smaller set too. Faint, but definitely there. Smaller than a man's. No construction boots. I didn't say anything about it. I just stepped back and stood there for a second, staring at the sheeting. That's when I saw it move. It was subtle. Just a ripple. Like someone had passed behind it. I froze. All the noise from the workers behind me faded, like the air around me got thicker. "Carla," I called out. She was still inside, but I took a step closer to the plastic. I swear, on my life, I saw a shape behind it. A figure, small, feminine, standing completely still. "Nina?" I said before I could stop myself. The sheeting rustled, but no wind. The air was dead still. Then she stepped out. She was maybe 6 feet from me. It was her, Nina. Same clothes, same red cap. But her face wasn't right. Her eyes didn't blink. Her mouth hung slightly open. There was this grayish tint to her skin, like she wasn't all the way here. She looked straight at me. No recognition, like she didn't see me at all. I couldn't breathe, couldn't move. She turned and walked past me, back toward the rear wall of the house, and with each step, her feet didn't quite touch the ground, just slightly off, like a glitch, like gravity didn't fully apply to her. The workers hadn't noticed. I looked over my shoulder, nothing but hammering and idle conversation, but I was shaking. I felt sick. I watched her walk to the back corner and then vanish. There was no door, no opening. She just stepped behind a pile of drywall and never came out the other side. I didn't even realize I dropped the photo until one of the guys picked it up and handed it to me. "You all right, man?" he asked. I nodded, but I wasn't. I told Carla what happened. She didn't ask questions. She just sat down on the floor and cried. That night, she called off the construction entirely, left the back half unfinished, said she'd rather live with plywood than whatever that was. We never talked about it again. Not really. I haven't been back to that house in years. Story 7. I grew up in a quiet neighborhood in Lompoc, California. Older homes, big trees, streets that stayed dark after sundown because no one ever fixed the busted streetlights. It was the kind of place where not much ever happened, which is probably why we found ways to make our own excitement. My best friend back then, Will, lived next door to this one house that always had a for sale sign in the yard. It was this worn-out Craftsman, gray siding, green trim, narrow porch that sagged a little. People moved in and then vanished like clockwork every few months. No garage sales, no goodbyes, just empty windows and silence the next morning. One night during winter break, I think we were juniors, Will and I were hanging out in his room, bored and wired on Mountain Dew. He pulled his blinds aside and looked at the house next door. "It's been empty for like 3 weeks," he said. "Want to check it out?" I stared at him. "You mean break in?" He smirked. "No one lives there. I've done it before. There's a dog door around back." I should have said no. I don't know why I didn't. Maybe because nothing ever happened in our town. Maybe because Will made everything feel like a game. It was cold that night, maybe 40 degrees, but clear, moonlit. We walked quietly across his yard and hopped the low fence into the neighbor's. The place looked worse up close. Peeling paint, dead leaves stuck in the gutters. Will led me around back and pointed at the plastic dog door at the bottom of the frame. "Give me a sec." He dropped onto his stomach and wriggled through like it was nothing. I stood there, heart pounding, until I heard the back door click open. "Come on," he whispered, motioning me inside. I stepped in, expecting dust, maybe cobwebs, but it wasn't like that. It was just empty. The air smelled like old wood and cold drywall. The electricity was off, but enough moonlight filtered in through the windows that I could see. The kitchen was to the right, this built-in breakfast nook under a big picture window. You could see the streetlight from there, one of the only working ones on the block. Will walked over and sat down on the floor across from the nook. I followed him. We didn't say much at first, just sat there, talking about random stuff, school, girls, where we wanted to go after graduation. Everything felt normal for about 10 minutes. Then it happened. Will had been mid-sentence when he suddenly jerked upright and screamed. The sound didn't even register before my vision snapped to black. Not like lights out, more like someone had poured ink over my eyes. I couldn't see anything. And then the cold hit. Not cold like weather. It was wrong. It sank into me. Heavy. Greasy. Like I'd stepped into a freezer full of rotting meat. My chest locked up and I started screaming, hands flailing around, trying to figure out where I was. I couldn't tell up from down. Then I felt a hand clamp around mine. Will's voice was shouting something I couldn't understand. He was dragging me, pulling me so hard it felt like my shoulder might dislocate. And then, just like that, I could see again. We were outside under the streetlight. I dropped to the curb, gasping, drenched in sweat, even though the air was freezing. Will stood there, bent over, hands on his knees. Neither of us spoke for a while. Finally, I managed, "What the hell just happened?" He looked at me, eyes wide, like he was still seeing it. "Something came out from under the table," he said quietly. I didn't say anything, just stared at him. "It was all black," he continued, "like a shadow, but thicker, like it had weight. It looked like a girl, I think. Long arms, no face. It crawled out, real slow, and climbed on top of you. You didn't even flinch. You just kept talking for a second. Then your eyes went wide and you started grabbing at the air like you were blind." I didn't know what to say. I just kept shaking my head. He wiped his face with his sleeve. "I didn't know what to do. I just grabbed you and ran." I remember sitting there on that curb, staring at the house. Something about it looked different now. The windows seemed darker, not just unlit, like they were absorbing light. I felt like if I looked too long, something would look back. We didn't call anyone. We didn't go back. I didn't sleep at all that night. The next day, I couldn't bring myself to walk past that house. I had to cross the street to avoid it, and I never went into Will's backyard again. For weeks after, I kept replaying that moment. The blackness, the cold, Will screaming. I tried to tell myself it was some kind of panic attack. Maybe my brain just short-circuited. But I've had panic attacks since then, and nothing, not once, has ever felt remotely like that. We still bring it up sometimes, Will and me, but never for long. Just enough to remind ourselves it happened. He swears it was real, and deep down, I know it was too. The house finally burned down about a year later. Electrical fire, they said. I didn't watch. Didn't even look out the window. Story 8. I'm not sure why I'm even sharing this. I haven't told many people because it sounds insane. But this happened to me when I was 17. I lived in Evansville, Indiana. Nothing really special about the town. Mostly quiet except when the college kids come back for the semester. I grew up there. Knew most of the neighborhoods, the churches, the gas stations that sold smokes to kids if you looked old enough. One of my closest friends back then was Marcus. We'd grown up on the same block, rode bikes together, broke windows together, fought other kids side by side. He was like a brother. After high school, his mom got remarried and they moved across town to this old rental house near the Ohio River. I'd still visit, crash there some weekends, stay up playing Xbox and talking about the same dumb stuff teenage guys talk about. But that house, something always felt off about it. The layout was strange, super narrow hallway. The living room was sunken, like you had to step down into it. His bedroom was upstairs, and right above the porch, there was this balcony with rotting wood rails that didn't look safe. But we'd still go out there sometimes to smoke or just stare at the river at night. Anyway, it was a Friday in late October, maybe a week before Halloween. I remember it because his mom had put out a bunch of decorations, fake cobwebs, plastic skeletons. That night felt heavier than usual. Not colder, just heavy. Like the air in the house didn't move. It was around 2 a.m. when Marcus passed out with his headset still on. I wasn't tired, but I turned off the TV and tried to get comfortable on the futon downstairs. But I couldn't sleep. Every time I shut my eyes, I kept hearing these weird little sounds. I thought it was the house creaking at first, but it wasn't creaking. It sounded like fast, soft footsteps, like something running in short bursts. And this giggling, not loud, not playful, quiet and broken, like a laugh that didn't want to be heard. It would come in quick little spurts, then nothing. Silence again. I sat up, told myself it was just Marcus messing with me. He had done crap like that before. But I called up to him and nothing. No reply. So I got up and went to the kitchen, poured a glass of water, and stood there listening. That's when I heard something upstairs. Not footsteps this time. Just a shift. Like weight being moved suddenly. I looked at the staircase. My chest started tightening for no reason I could understand. I didn't see anything. But I knew someone was standing at the top of those stairs. I stepped out onto the front porch to get some air, sat down on one of the plastic chairs out there. I didn't want to admit it, but I was freaked. I kept looking over my shoulder like I expected something to crawl out of the walls. I thought maybe a smoke would help, but I didn't have any, so I just stared out into the street. and then I saw movement in the corner of my eye. I turned to look through the living room window. Marcus had left the blinds half open, and that's when I saw it. There was a figure on the balcony, not a person. I know how that sounds, but I swear to God, it was not a person. It was pitch black, like it didn't have any light on it at all, even though the porch light was on. It looked like it was made of shadows. It stood perfectly still at first, then started twitching, like its whole body was stuttering. One shoulder jerked up, then its head jolted sideways. It looked like it was glitching in real life. I couldn't move. I just stared at it. It turned to face me. No eyes, no face, just a black, jittery outline. And then it opened its mouth, or what I think was its mouth. The shape tore open from where its head should have been, and it screamed. No sound came out, not at first. My ears popped like I was going underwater. Then the scream hit me a second later. It didn't sound human. It was like someone had taken a scream, reversed it, and played it through blown-out speakers. I felt it in my chest before I even processed the sound. I don't remember anything after that. I swear, I do not remember falling asleep. I don't remember blacking out. I don't remember collapsing. But when I opened my eyes, it was morning. The sun was up, the birds were making noise, cars were passing, and I was still on the porch, only now I was lying on the ground, flat on my back. My shirt was ripped down the middle and my skin was burning. I reached up to touch my chest and my fingers came away with blood. I had this long, shallow cut across my chest, like something had scratched me, and a few smaller ones on my face, like claw marks or barbed wire. I sat up, confused, trying to figure out if I'd fallen or something, but there were no splinters, no bruises, nothing that explained what had happened, just the cuts and a pounding in my head. I went inside. Marcus was still upstairs, completely fine, asleep with his mouth open. I had to wake him up and ask him what happened, and he just looked at me like I was nuts, said he hadn't heard anything. Story 9. I was 17, living with my mom and younger sister in a two-story rental on the edge of a small town in Indiana. It wasn't the middle of nowhere, but close enough, one of those neighborhoods where every other porch light's busted and the nearest cop station's 20 minutes away. The kind of place where things feel quieter than they should be. Our house had this old, creaky wooden porch out front. The front door was thick oak, but it had this big vertical pane of glass in the center, probably 2 feet wide and 5 feet tall. Someone had stuck a cheap lace curtain over it years before we moved in. It didn't offer much privacy. You could still see silhouettes through it, especially at night if the living room light was on. This happened on a Thursday. I remember because I had a geometry test the next day, and I was sitting at the dining table working on equations I didn't understand. The table faced the door directly, maybe 15 feet away, so I had a clear line of sight to the front of the house. It was just after 9, pitch black outside. We didn't have the porch light on, never did. The bulb had blown a month earlier, and none of us remembered to replace it. I was home alone. Mom was on the late shift at the hospital, and my sister was at a sleepover. I was mid-problem, just staring blankly at my textbook, when I heard the screen door creak. It was unmistakable. Our screen door was old and rusted, and when it moved, it made this loud scraping sound like metal being twisted. I looked up from my book, confused more than anything. We weren't expecting anyone, and nobody in their right mind would be visiting in that kind of darkness. Not without calling first. I stared at the front door. Through the lace, I could see movement. The screen door, though I couldn't see it clearly, was swinging open. Slow, deliberate. No knock, no voice. Just the soft creak as it reached the fully open position and stayed there. I got this weird, hollow feeling in my chest. You know that sensation when your body knows something's wrong before your brain does? That was it. I just froze. I didn't move, didn't breathe, didn't even blink. I just stared. Nobody knocked. Nobody came in. But I knew, absolutely knew, there was someone on the other side of that glass. I leaned a bit forward in my chair, trying to catch any movement. If someone had opened that door and stepped away, I'd see their silhouette through the curtain. I should have seen something, but I didn't. It looked completely empty out there. Still, that screen door stayed wide open like it was being held, After maybe 30 seconds, I started to convince myself it was the wind. I started to breathe again, telling myself it had to be a gust or something. I mean, maybe it blew it open? Even though I'd never seen that door move without someone yanking it? Then just as I was about to get up and check, just as I was starting to get my courage up, the screen door started to close. But it didn't slam. It didn't creak. It moved slowly, silently, like someone was pulling it shut by hand, guiding it closed carefully to keep it quiet. That was the part that made my stomach twist. If it had just slammed shut, fine, wind, whatever. But this? Someone was out there, and they were trying not to make noise. I didn't move. I couldn't. I was sitting there, gripping the edge of the table so hard my knuckles hurt. My eyes were locked on the door, on that stupid lace curtain, praying something, anything, would give me a sign of who it was. But nothing ever did. The screen door clicked into place softly, like whoever it was had taken their time to line it up with the frame. I waited. I don't know how long. Felt like 10 minutes. Might have been two. I finally grabbed my phone, hands shaking, and dialed my mom. She picked up on the second ring. "Everything okay?" she asked, her voice all background noise and exhaustion. I whispered, "I think someone was just on the porch." "What do you mean, was?" I told her exactly what I saw. The screen door, the lack of any silhouette, the slow closing. She got quiet. Then she said, "Did you lock the front door?" I hadn't. I got up slowly, like moving too fast would set something off. I kept my eyes on the glass the whole time, walking sideways like I expected a face to suddenly press up against it. I reached the deadbolt and turned it, trying to be quiet about it. It clicked. That tiny sound felt louder than anything in the house. I backed away, still staring, phone pressed to my ear like it was my lifeline. Mom said she'd called the neighbor across the street, this older guy named Bill who sometimes watched the place when we were out. She hung up, and I stood in the hallway, barely breathing. I didn't hear footsteps. Didn't hear anyone walking off the porch. Didn't hear a car pull away. Nothing. A few minutes later, Bill called me. Said he'd walked over with a flashlight and checked the porch in the yard. No one was out there. No footprints in the dirt. No sign anyone had been there at all. I didn't sleep that night. Story 10. I'm Aaron. I'm from Detroit. East Side, down near the old plants where they used to build Packards. I grew up in a row of duplexes that all looked the same. Peeling paint, chain-link fences, busted-up porches. We lived on the top floor of one, and the basement was split with the downstairs tenants. I was 15 when this happened. I've never told anyone outside my brother. I don't care if you believe me. I just want it out of my head. Our landlord was this old Polish guy named Mr. Kozlowski. Barely spoke English and only showed up when rent was due. But I remember once he told my mom not to store anything in the furnace room. "Keep out from there. Nothing good," he said. Thought he meant rats or something. My mom just rolled her eyes. She never listened to anyone about anything. That furnace room had its own door. It was built into the far wall of the basement, opposite where we kept our washer and dryer. The door was metal and painted black, which always struck me as weird. It had no lock, just one of those old spring latches, the kind you could pop with a butter knife. And it had this awful smell, not like gas or mold, more like old meat, wet, sour. One night in October, this was 2009, I was doing laundry. It was around 10. My brother was out, mom was at work, I was home alone. I remember the dryer made this loud banging sound, like someone threw a boot inside. I figured
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Something heavy got caught, so I went down to check. The light above the stairs was burnt out, so I used my phone's flashlight. It was always creepy down there, with the concrete floor and spiderwebs. But this night felt off, heavier somehow. I noticed the banging was coming from the furnace room, Not the dryer, just the solid rhythmic thump, thump, thump. I froze on the last step, holding my basket. I thought maybe Kozlowski was down there working on something. Maybe he came in through the back alley without saying anything. But then the thumping stopped, just dead silence. Then I heard breathing from inside the room. Heavy, slow breathing. Not like a man out of breath, but more like someone enjoying the air. Like deep inhales through a big nose, wet exhales through a dry throat. I just stood there, not sure if I was imagining it. I whispered, "Hello?" and felt stupid right after. Whatever was in there, it answered. Not with words, but this slow creaking sound as the door to the furnace room eased open. Just a crack, but enough to see. Inside it was pitch black. Blacker than the rest of the basement. I mean impossibly dark, like light just refused to go in. Then the smell hit me, full force, raw, old blood. Something rotting behind walls. I gagged. I didn't wait to see anything else. I backed up the stairs fast, two at a time, slammed the door, locked it, and sat with my back against it for what felt like hours. Later, my brother came home. I told him what happened. He didn't laugh, not once. He looked scared, like really scared. Then he told me something he never told anyone before. When he was younger, about 10, he used to hear tapping behind the furnace room wall when he'd play down there. Said one day he peeked through the old vent grate and swore he saw a hand. Pale, thin, with long fingers. Not a grown man's hand. Something else. He said he told Mom, and she beat his ass for making up stories. He never brought it up again. After that night, I never did laundry alone. We tried to ignore the room, stuffed towels under the basement door. Didn't matter. The smell came through sometimes. Some nights we'd hear thumps again, breathing. Once my brother swore he heard whispering, just faint, like someone talking through a wall underwater. Then one night, about a month after it happened, the furnace room door slammed, just out of nowhere, middle of the night. Woke the whole house. I ran down with my bat and found the basement door wide open. We kept it locked always. But that night it wasn't, just swinging on its hinges. The black door, still shut. But I noticed something new, something that made me freeze in place. On the floor leading away from the furnace room door were footprints, bare, wet footprints, human-shaped, but not quite right. The toes were too long, the arch too high, like someone had been walking on the balls of their feet, or something pretending to. I followed them to the stairs. They ended at the second step. No exit, nothing else. Just gone. We moved 2 months later. I didn't even help pack the basement.